G'day team, welcome to another installment of You Know What. Before we get underway with the actual proper intro, just a quickie to let you know that this potty was in fact not a quickie, but rather a longie, a long chat that is. So we've divided it into parts one and two, as is often the way with a two-part podcast. So this is part one, and we will see you tomorrow for part two. Love you guts. G'day team, welcome to the You Project. Hope this finds you just terrific, whatever you're doing, if you're at the gym, if you're out for a bike ride, if you're in the car, if you're at home, if you're in bed. A lot of people actually, well, not a lot, but quite a few people have said to me, Tiffany Ann Cook, hello to you.
Hello, hello Habs, hello people.
Hello humans, hello people of Melbourne, of Australia, of the world. Quite a lot of people have said to me that they go to bed listening to me and whoever I'm chatting with, me and you, me and Melissa, me and a guest just banging on. And it kind of, it's like it gives them, I don't know, like a sense of comfort or something, just going to bed listening to somebody that they know. That's funny. I do that too sometimes.
I do that with audiobooks. I often, you know, sometimes you just need something that you can pop your attention on.
Yeah. And you just turn it down a little bit so you can kind of just hear the conversation, but it's not banging in your ears. So if this is you right now and you're in bed listening to this, rock-a-bye, lullaby, go to sleep, little you. All right.
Today was the day. I thought I was going to have to trick you one day to get that on a recording.
Yeah, no, nobody needs me singing, that is for sure. And if you were at the gym and you're trying to get psyched for a fucking heavy squat, I apologize.
It's a pretty stunning little voice you've got there, and how exciting that in a couple of weeks you'll be able to talk to someone about that, because I've lined up a guest for you.
Oh, that's right. That singing coach bloke that you reckon is terrific, and I'm like,
yep.
How exciting
is that?
And
we might just have you on The Voice in no time.
We definitely won't, but Tiff often, you know, sends me a message or rings me and goes, I've got this person and this is who they are and this is what they do, and I go, nah. She goes, no, he's great. I go, nah. So she rings me and goes, I've got this guy as a singing coach. Nah. Like, no one wants to hear a fucking singing coach. No, he's awesome. I'm like, is he? Oh, yeah, he does neuroscience and psychology and this is, oh, it's not just about singing. I'm like, all right, so this, I'm pre-warning you, he better be fucking good.
Well, very selfishly, I was fascinated by him, but that could just be me and my quirky little brain, but you know, I just thought what he does and the whole difference in perspective. I was like a kid in a candy shop with that conversation.
Well, we'll see. So, if you shit, you're into. I'm only kidding, everyone. I'm only kidding. Before anyone, you're so mean to her. She knows I'm fucking around. All right. So this is what we're doing. So I spoke to you this morning. I said, let's do a potty the Sarvo. So as we sit here right now, it's 4:17 on the 17th of the 6th, which is a Thursday in the thriving metropolis of Melbourne. Anyway, that is the time. And I said to Tiff, I said, love, I said, pet. I said, let's do a Q&A. You come up with 10 questions that you've never asked me or that perhaps I've never been asked. And on the podcast, 10 hard questions. So I honestly do not know what I'm about to be asked. There's been no prep on my part. So this could be a disaster.
We might get hardest homework anyone could have ever given me. Imagine the guy that talks about everything, no holds barred, ringing you and saying, look, we're almost at episode 500. I've had over 500 conversations and I'd like you to think of not one but 10 questions that I've never touched on before. I mean, that in itself is quite ludicrous.
What it is, it's an opportunity for you to expand your mind and get out of your comfort zone and think, you're welcome.
I've got more than 10 questions, bro. My mind has expanded.
Well, we will see. Now, I don't know what's coming, so here's my disclaimer. None of what we're about to talk about is medical advice, is psychological advice. It's a general conversation about questions. So, oh, I'm a little bit nervous. A general conversation about different topics, I guess. All right, so do your best.
All right, well, there's a bit of a mix of things. There's some personal stuff. There's some not personal stuff. There's stuff that isn't super deep, but I just don't know about you. So let's just see where it goes, shall we? You ready for question number one, Harps? I want to ease you in gently.
I'm ready for question one.
Question number one, I want you to, what are three things that you believe that everyone needs to be aware of and they're typically not, that have the ability to profoundly shape our thinking and our behaviours? Three things.
Wow, fuck, you could have given me. Okay, well,
that's me not going deep.
I just need to write them down. So you might have to edit out like the 30 seconds of think time. Okay, all right. So that's a really good question. Okay, so there are probably a multitude of things, but the things that came to mind for me quite quickly are, so what I'm answering is, what are the three things that can profoundly affect our life or our thinking or our reality? Is that right?
Yeah. The way that we think and behave.
Okay, so one is, and I've spoken about this many times, so one is our programming. So, and that is that we all know that we've kind of been trained and taught and told and programmed, but we talk about consciousness and awareness a lot, but nonetheless, including me, we do a lot of life on autopilot. And I'm the guy who teaches, let's try not to do all of life on autopilot. Autopilot works to a point. So our standard operating system, and a lot of what we do is very repetitive by nature and also by design and also by necessity. Like we all get up, we all go to the toilet, we have a wee, we wash our hands, we have a shower, we go to work, we eat breakfast, lunch, dinner, we have a lot of the same conversations and we go to the gym and do the same. Now those things, those rituals are not bad, but I think it's identifying what are the rituals and what is the programming that doesn't work for me, and trying to just be aware of the space between what is possible for me, what is my potential, and how am I limited by my programming and my default setting that I never actually chose. So we all have a default behavioral setting, or a behavioral default setting, a cognitive default setting, and to an extent, an emotional default setting, and a communicative, the way that we communicate. And I know for me, that's been hard because I've become aware that I've had to become more aware of how I communicate and how I share thoughts and stories and ideas and how I create connection with people, because most people don't think or learn or process like I do. So there's no use me doing a talk to me, right? And I, that's what I used to do a bit of. So one is programming. Two, I'm going to say, which also I've banged on about, but it makes difference, is having an awareness of the fact that we only live in our own reality. So subjective reality. So we live in this external physical world. We interact in that objective space that we call the world, with situation, circumstance, environment, other humans, conversations, work, money, government, weather, COVID, all the practical things. So there's the world I'm in and then the world in me, and understanding that there's what's going on and then there's my story about what's going on. There's what that person is saying to me, there's their intention, and then there's my story about what they're saying to me. So understanding the nature of personal reality, not the nature of reality broadly, but the nature of my reality. And so that is, in order for me to also connect with you and I, like, for example, you and Melissa are very different, right? You're more gregarious, you're more outgoing, you're more cheeky, you're more of a risk taker, you're more... you know, let's just get shit done. And Melissa's very methodical, very OCD, very cross the T's, dot the I's, very, you know, not better or worse, you're both different. Mm. So in order for me to have an optimal relationship with you as a friend and also as someone that I work with, and the same with Melissa, I need to be really aware of both of your individual realities, the way that you both see the world, the way that you both manage the relationship that you have with me, the way that you both navigate the roles that you have in context to the U project and so on. So understanding reality would be second one. And then the third one would be our relationship with fear. And so that is just, is to understand that fear is normal and fear is not bad and fear is not weak. And I am fearful and you are fearful, Tiff, of things. And everyone that listens to this has got fear around something. Some fear is more obvious than apparent. Some is more subtle and perhaps hidden. But it's not bad to be terrified or fearful, but it's the way that we manage that. And the goal is not fearlessness. The goal is courage. So despite my fear, I will be courageous. Despite my fear, I will do the thing that is right. So they would be my three things.
Lovely. Great answers.
Thank you.
Second one's an easy one, but I don't know this about you. Have you ever travelled for the sake of travel and not just incidentally for work? Have you ever taken time to travel the world, experience culture, and why or why not?
So not for a while, well, because of COVID, but I've been to a bunch of places. I've been to probably about 16, 17 countries, but I'll tell you one just quick one I went to, which people might find interesting. I went to South Africa just around the turn of the century, 99, 2000, with an organization called Door of Hope, and to do a bit of a, to do some research with them to figure out how we could help through that organization children who were born with HIV, HIV positive, because their mum had HIV, obviously. And so I spent about a month in South Africa going around to different hospitals and medical facilities and homes, that what they call homes. The first day I went there, I went to a place called Acres of Love, which was a residential house with four bedrooms and four bunk beds. So 16 infants, basically, between newborn-ish and about four. Mm. And they're all HIV positive. And literally 10 minutes after I got there, I was in the deep end helping and working and feeding kids and playing and making beds and, you know, and yeah, it was, so that was not really recreational, but it was hugely rewarding, hugely eye-opening.
How old were you then?
Hugely paradigm shifting 20 years ago. So 37. But, you know, I've been to the States a bunch of time to fuck around and see people. And I've been to London. I've been to Sweden. I've been to Vanuatu. I've been to New Zealand. I've been to, I don't know, a bunch of joints. But, yeah, I love travel. I love travel. But also, having said that, every time I get back to Australia, I just go, yeah, best place ever, though. I mean, there are some awesome places. But, you know, that's one of the many reasons that I'm, I don't know, it sounds flippant and cheesy, but incredibly grateful for where I live, because I've just, you know, it's like we have, you know, it's not the perfect country and it's not like nobody lives in adversity, and I get all of that. But, you know, when I was in South Africa, first time I went to a shanty town where there was about a million people in an area of about, oh, I don't know, a kilometre by a kilometre, maybe 2Ks by 2Ks, like tiny. Where my mum and dad live, there's 20,000 people in Morwell. Well, nowhere near as big as Morwell, nowhere near as big, and a million people.
Far out.
Yeah, and people just living on top of each other in abject poverty.
Wow.
And then you just go, oh, yeah, that's right. I have no problems, no issues, you know. And, just the stuff that – anyway, let's not get too deep, but the stuff that we take for granted, we've got no idea, you know. And it's – you don't really – it's like you know, you don't, you can understand, like, for example, working with Johnny that got blown up and all that, people hear his story and hear, you know, the different stories. It's like, yeah, oh, that's terrible. But there's difference between hearing that story or hearing about South Africa or Shantytown or hearing about somebody who did this or that. But there's a difference between hearing about that and being in the middle of it, or being the person that's the subject, or, you know, and without being too melodramatic, that's why I kind of, I always encourage people, don't wait for the catastrophe. And you know, don't wait for the thing that you currently have to be ripped away from you before you realize how fucking awesome what you have right now, like what you have and where you are right now. Not everyone, but most of us, it's pretty amazing compared to where a lot of people are and what a lot of people have. And but we tend to not have the level of gratitude that that thing deserves, because we're always looking somewhere else for something else rather than going where I am. And I've said many times, if right now is the best that my life ever gets, if it's as good as it gets, I'm so grateful, because I am absolutely spoiled and privileged. My life is just complete compared to most people in the world. It's just complete fucking fantasy and opulence, and, you know, it's just a blessing, you know? And I truly believe that. I know people say that shit, but I truly believe that. Like, when I get up and I look at John get up from a bench in the gym, and how hard it is for him to get up, and how, and then to stand still and not to fall and to balance and to be able to, you know, and I've caught him 200 times in the gym where he was going to fall, right? So for me to just stand up from this seat I'm in now and to have no pain and no balance issues and no injuries, and just to walk out and get a cup of tea, that's a privilege. Like, he would pay $1 million for that. If he could have my body and my level of function, he would give away everything that he's got to have it. But he doesn't have that option. But here I am in my 57-year-old, relatively perfectly functional body. So I need to be grateful, because it's a gift. But we don't know these things are gifts until they get taken. Then we go, oh, fuck, now all I want is what I had but didn't appreciate.
It's hard to learn that, isn't it? And it's hard to learn that because we watched it happen. We watched it happen collectively when COVID hit, and all we wanted was our 2020 to be like 2019, when most of us whinged at the end of 2019. And then when we got a little bit of normal again, we went back to a normal again. And it seems to be collectively a really, we're not wired to learn those things without a little bit of, I guess, deliberate action, deliberate focus.
And the thing is that, you know, again, old territory, but okay, so, I mean, I get it. It's like, I was on the phone to my mum last night, God bless her, and my mum worries about a lot of people, right? And, you know, they always talk hands-free. So mum can talk and dad can talk, and dad's always in the background like one of the fucking Muppets. And he only talks about every 2 minutes, right? Right? If mum wakes up at 2:30 and she's worried about me, right? Now, I never give her anything to worry about, because I just tell her everything's great, because everything is great.
Yeah.
But she'll think of something she needs to worry about me, and that'll be it. There's no more sleep, right? And COVID, and what about your work, and what about your income, and what about your study, and what about, you know, you need to see people, you live by yourself, it's not, you know, and all that. I go, mum, you're not even listening to me. I am great. I'm great. But let's just say, mum, I wasn't great. Let's say instead of being 10 out of 10, I was a 7. I'm all right, but I'm not awesome. I go, but mum, you lying in bed for 3 hours stressing about me doesn't change anything. Right? Now, I understand you love me and it's great, and you stressing about something that's happening with the government, or and by the way, me saying this doesn't fix it, but all of these kind of things start with acknowledgement and awareness. And so when people say to me, why aren't you bothered by XYZ, whatever the thing that they think I should be bothered about is, generally the answer is because I can't change it. Do I like it? No. Do I think it's unfair? Yes. Do I think maybe someone or something got it wrong? Sometimes. Does me complaining about it fix it? No. Does that mean I should never take a stand? No, it doesn't mean that. It just means for this thing right now, what I do is I say, all right, what's the best use of my energy and focus and attention today? And it's not me jumping online, bitching about someone or something, and then going back and forwards for 2 hours in the echo chamber of my thought with people who think like me and agree with me. And all we want to do is just hate the opposition. And I'm not even talking about who or what the opposition is or the subject matter, right? But it's just, there's so much in terms of this group, whatever group, fitness group, food group, political group, religious group, whatever, this group hating that group. Nobody's listening to each other because everybody's interested in being right and everybody's fucking fighting everyone who doesn't sound like them. And what we don't understand, and I said this to the crab recently, is understanding another point of view doesn't mean condoning, right? And we think in our culture that if Tiff thinks something that I don't agree with, but I say I understand her, then what I'm doing is I'm now a supporter. No, I'm not a supporter. I'm just somebody that understands why she thinks or feels that way, which ain't necessarily good or bad. Well, actually, it's good because we can't, even in war, we can't overcome what we don't understand, right? And I hate war, by the way. But even if I'm talking with someone who I completely fucking disagree with, I don't want to win a conversation because what's the point? It doesn't change him or her or anything. I want to understand them because it's only through understanding that we can really make progress, not through screaming and yelling and finger pointing. Steps down off soapbox.
I can't believe you wind up there when I asked just a simple bloody question about whether or not you've travelled. It's amazing where you can go, Craig.
Well, that's the point. That's why we have
went on a world trip that just then. I love it.
Well, I think we have a starting point and we go where we go.
I've got a good one. Well, I think it's a good one. If man did not develop language, do you think that the world would be a better place and we would be more emotionally sound?
Fucking hell. What?
If we could not converse by language, and do you know why this pops into my head?
Go.
Because I've got a dog.
Let me tell you. Because of animals.
Yeah, because of animals. I've got a dog and I have unconditional love, and you buy a dog and you take it home and you and the dog are in love, and there is no way to earn that dog's trust but with your actions and your behaviours, and there's an understanding and you learn to know each other. And I can't talk to that dog, but I know when that dog knows me, and I have a relationship that doesn't bring with it all of the shit that we bring when we... And this question will lead into the next question that I ask, so get prepared to go deep.
All right, so the answer to your question is no. I think if you're not talking about communication, you're talking about talking, right?
Yes.
Communication is multifaceted. And by the way, you and your dog communicate all the time, right? You have a language. It's not verbal. And it's not English and it's not Dutch or German, but you have a language and she tells you things and you tell her things, and there's a level of comprehension and understanding. And the way that you communicate and connect and interact and love and do life together is based on a form of communication, but not the way that humans communicate. Or, having said that, this almost the smallest percentage of the way that we interact, connect, communicate and understand, comprehend and process each other, say that 10 times fast, almost the smallest component is words, right? So if we didn't have language, as in we do the verbal word-based language, do I think we'd be a much more kind, compassionate? No, I don't, because it's not about the language, it's about the nature of dogs and animals, domesticated animals anyway, it's different, right? Wild animals, it's with animals generally operate on, I'm not a fucking animal expert, by the way, but my understanding observation is that they're very, very instinctive, and they're driven by nature, and they're also, you know, some animals are within their herd or their pack, you know, incredibly loyal and loving and incredibly intelligent. I think animals are, and I'm not one of those run around and, you know, pumping the fist in the air animal lovers, although I love animals, but I just look at it from a, I try to look at it from a, an analytical and scientific point of view. You know, animals don't just, for the most part, almost no animals don't just kill each other for the sake of killing. But humans do. So the answer is no. If we could have a nature that was, you know, more close to, for example, you know, dogs, not all dogs, but in that kind, loving, they don't judge you, they don't, they don't process the world that the way that we do. And so, you know, which is why if you think on an evolutionary timeline, like you get any animal in the wild, apart, not animals like we think, dogs, cats, they're all domesticated, right? but back in fucking 5,000, 10,000, 20,000 years ago, by the way, Homo sapiens have been around for about 300,000 years. And for almost all of that time, we did not live anything like we currently live. Like, we, none of us were doing anything like this. For almost all of our timeline, we were the weakest, right? But we had the biggest brain. And we only survived because we could build tools, because we could create shelter and protection. And, you know, so, but if it was just left to, you think of a naked human in the jungle versus all the other naked animals in the jungle, we're fucked. We're fucked quickly. But we learned to operate in tribes and to hunt and to, you know, all of these things. And I know I'm digressing, but my answer is no. I don't think the problem is the fact that we can communicate verbally. I think it's the fact that sometimes we're just not, sometimes some of us are just not nice. And talking or not.
I almost want to just challenge you on that, but I'm going to lead it straight in because I think the next question is going to open that up as well. So my next question is, what's the purpose? What do you think the purpose of metacognition is when it seems to be so dissociated from our subconscious and our autonomic nervous systems? And part two of that is, do you think that language is the reason for this dissociation? Would we have metacognition at all if we didn't have language?
Yeah. Well, okay. As in verbal language, you mean, right?
Yeah, of course.
Right. So metacognition, just for the five people who have missed the thousand times we've spoken about it, metacognition is thinking about thinking. And you don't need to be able to speak verbally to think about your thinking, right? You don't need to be able to do that, because when we talk about thinking, thinking leads to behavior. Like, why did I behave like that? Well, I behaved like that because I thought this. This was my story. Tiff was rude to me, so I treated her that way. That's my justification, right? That's having an awareness of the thought that preceded the behavior. So the value in metacognition, whether or not, you know,
purpose,
we can articulate the purpose in metacognition, okay, is awareness, is self-awareness. Why am I doing these things? Because if we're talking about conscious behaviors, we're not just talking about autonomic, you know, my heart's beating, you know, a fly flew on my nose and I just wiped it off, but things that actually require a level of critical thought and decision-making, all of our decisions and our behaviors in that realm are driven by thought. We're not accidentally going to the pub. We're not accidentally punching someone in the face. We're not accidentally kicking a dog or cuddling a dog. We're not accidentally, we're consciously doing these things. And so the purpose of metacognition, for me anyway, is for me to start to explore my why, my reasons, my behaviors. Why do I feel insecure when this good-looking bastard with the six-pack is around? Why do I feel compelled? Why do I feel compelled to brag? Or why do I feel compelled to, you know, rationalize this or explain that or justify that? Or, you know, and then I start to, you know, this is the hard thing though, because these are hard questions for ourselves. Because,
and also, why were we given this gift as, like, from the back in the caveman days, why were we given the opportunity? How did this develop? Why did we develop this and other animals didn't develop it?
What, the ability to think about how we think?
Yeah.
Well, that you'd have to ask, depending on your belief system, the creator. But Christians believe the world's only been around for 6,000, fundamental Christians believe the world's only 6,000 years old. Evolutionists people who are on the all team, creation is 6,000, evolution is millions of years that the world has been in existence, but 300 or so thousand years, depending on which data you look at, that humans in our current form have been around. Why? I don't know. I don't know. We have a disproportionately large brain for the size of our body compared to other animals. And we have the ability to, you know, for better or worse, I don't think intelligence, you know, this seems contrary, doesn't it? Because we go, yeah, but all, look at all the great shit we got. Yeah, we do have great shit, but look at all the stupid shit we do. Look at the stupid shit we do to each other. Mm. You know, if I was the boss of the world, there'd be no countries. There'd just be a world. There'd just be a world. There'd be no borders. There'd be just, and they, you know, like, of course, I'm being silly, but I wish there was no division. I wish there was, you know, it's like America hates this country and this country hates America and Australia's better than New Zealand. New Zealand's been fucking, Queenslanders hate New South Wales and Victorians hate fucking the WA and we're fucking, and this color hates that color and this race and that race and geez. Like it's like all that is just self-created human stuff that we created. We created these, you know, all of these constructs and these limitations and these divisions. And I know we're going really deep now, but I genuinely love people. I love people. And it doesn't matter straight, gay, color, culture, background. It's like I'm interested in people's nature. I'm interested in the way people think and the way they treat other people, you know, and that isn't, you know, and by the way, I'm not special. I've done my fair share of dumb shit and bad shit and judging and, you know, I'm not special at all, but I just recognize what works and what doesn't. And back to your question, why were we given this gift? I don't know. I don't know why we were given the gift, but I think what matters is what we do with the gift. I think what matters is, okay, we're intelligent. Well, we think we are, you know, that's a really philosophical question too, because you go, so what's the evidence that we're intelligent? Oh, well, we would go, oh, well, we've got technology and light and we've got medicine and we've got all of these things and therefore we're intelligent. You go, yeah, but are we happy? Well, like there's, how many people do you talk to that are not happy? And I'm not being critical. I talk to a lot of people who've got a lot of shit, a lot of technology, a lot of money, a lot of success in inverted commas, and they're depressed and they're anxious and they're unfulfilled and they're scared and they're, and again, no judgment, just my observation and story, you know? Yeah. And I've never seen a dolphin with a fucking anxiety issue. You know, I don't know. Maybe they exist. I don't know. Like, I just think these are big questions and we don't know, but fuck, I love them. Good question by you.
Fucking hell. Well, I wish I had the answer for me. Now I've got to keep searching.
I don't know that there's an, see, that's one of the things too, right? Let me just speak to this. I want the answer. Why? I want to know why. He's, you know, we are wired because we want certainty and we want, like, guess what? So much, even the shit that we really think we know, you know what? A lot of it we don't know. It's just what we think. And we confuse what we think with knowledge. I used to know that I was in a religion that was the best one. Guess what? I was wrong. I didn't know at all. I was just programmed. I used to know that the food pyramid was optimal eating for humans. I didn't know at all. I was just programmed. I used to know that I was shit at sport and I could never be in shape. I didn't know at all. It's just what I believed, but it was flawed. Like we get very egotistical and self-righteous about our beliefs, and we confuse our beliefs with absolute truth, right? The truth is very personal. Like for some people, the truth right now is this podcast fucking boring. But the next, no, that's possible, right, though?
Yeah. Yeah.
And if their experience is this is boring, then that is true. Then for them, what is true is this conversation is boring. For someone else, their experience is this conversation is interesting. And so their experience is interest. That's what they're in the middle of. They're in the middle of an interesting conversation, and that's their belief, and that becomes their truth. Somebody else might be going, fucking hell, this is confusing. That's their story. They believe that. Their truth is, this is a confusing fucking conversation. What are you talking about? That's their truth. That's their experience. So, you know, there's very little objective truth.
Mm.
Or put it this way, there's a lot of subjective truth. You know, to say this is good or this is bad. You know, sex outside of marriage, that's bad. Really? Yes. Some other people are going, no. But both people, they're in their own version of the truth.
Mm.
It's, you know, like there are so many rabbit holes you can go down with all of these things, and we keep forgetting that my entire understanding of the world and everything I believe and everything I know, in inverted commas, and everything that comes out of my mouth is purely just my version of reality. It's not objective at all. So when people say to me, are you objective, Craig? The answer is no. But you know what? I'm aware of my lack of objectivity. I'm aware that when I have a conversation or when I make a judgment or when I assess a situation, that I'm doing it through the filter of my values and beliefs and biases and prejudices, and that is just a crack in the door opening to the beginning of greater, not total, but a greater level of objectivity and a greater level of awareness. The beginning of awareness is to recognize your lack of awareness and to be humble enough to go, I don't fucking know. I don't know. This is just what I think. And literally that's this podcast. I don't know. I'm going to tell you what I think. Fuck. That's why I said at the start, this is not a prescription. This is not advice. This is you asking me questions and me thinking out loud and hopefully me stimulating the brains and the minds of others so that they might then think about some similar things for themselves, so we can all figure out what the fuck do I believe, not what have I been programmed with. Like, this is the recognition of your programming and your lack of objectivity is the start of greater objectivity and greater awareness and greater critical thinking. The end.
Bam.
Once again, to let you know, team, that was the end of part one. We'll be back tomorrow with part two for the continuation of this. And if I dare say so myself, I think part two is better than part one. Hopefully part one was all right. If we're giving it a 7, I reckon part two might be an 8. See you tomorrow.